Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris and John Brown. Ira is an independent floor trader, a successful hedge fund manager, global macro consultant, trading foreign currencies, bonds, commodities, and equities for over 40 years. He was also CME director from 1997 to 2003. And John is the senior market strategist for Euro-Pacific Capital. He's a distinguished former member of Britain's Parliament, who served on the Treasury Select Committee as chairman of the Conservative Small Business Committee, and also as a principal advisor to the British government on issues relating to geopolitical matters. He's worked for Morgan Stanley as an investment banker, and he's also worked for other firms, Barclays Bank and Citigroup. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So I thought today we'd discuss the implications of the recent elections in Germany on the EMU, the Euro, ECB policies, financial markets, and the European economy. Your thoughts, I guess we can start with Ira, what you think happened and what the implications are?
Well, you know, Richard, we've talked about this, and, you know, I've written quite a bit about it over longer than I care to think about. But the results were, to me, a phenomenal loss for Merkel, because she not only slipped from her vote totals, but it was a very big slap in her face. And like in the Brexit vote, you know, they want to sell it as an anti-immigration. And I think it's so much bigger than that. I think this part of the vote, and if we go back to when the AfD first began, I think in 2013, when it was founded by the various economists, the issue is far more financial than anything else. Yeah, the AfD attracted some fringe wackos, as we might call them, but most importantly, the Free Democrats resurrected themselves, and I think this is a very big statement as to how Germany will face what Macron has been trying to push down. I would say Macron and Draghi have been trying to push down the throats of German taxpayers, but not, of course, they never had the okay from German voters. So I think that this has a long way to play out and is in a very important vote. And I might add, because we have John, the biggest winner from here may be Theresa May, but we'll leave that for further discussion.
And John, your thoughts?
Well, I'm most interested by what Ira said, because I think you're absolutely right. Theresa May may be the biggest winner of this, because Merkel is very pro-German industry, and that points towards a mutually favorable Brexit from Germany, at least, and Germany really runs the European Union, although slightly in name it's Franco-German, and popular it's meant to be everybody, but basically Germany runs the whole show, and that's a very important thing that Ira mentioned. I think I agree with Ira that Merkel had a big loss. She was elected as forecast, but there was nobody else. But she's weakened significantly. I mean, the interesting thing was the combination, again, getting back to what Ira said, it wasn't all immigration. It was partly to do with financial. The alternative for Deutschland, the alternative for Germany, went from zero seats to 88, and the Freedom Democratic Party went from zero to 69 seats. 152 seats against Merkel's 217. So it's a big block in there, and it's going to sober a lot of the left wing in Germany. The Greens lost, and the left both lost seats. And so I think that's very interesting in my view, and I agree with what Ira said. I think it's going to boost the thing for Brexit because she's going to be favorable to a good deal for German business. As far as the ECB is concerned, I think there's going to be continued press for EMU, European Monetary Union. The euro is flawed fatally, basically because it doesn't have a unified economy. And so each threat to the euro is going to be used by the European elite to force closer and closer fiscal unity on the way to becoming a super state. And talk about undemocratic. I mean, I call it the Euro-Soviet for a good reason, is that they say they're going to be, they offer a parliament, which is duly elected, and I think quite fairly with proportional representation. But of course, they give that parliament no power, just as happened in the Soviet Union. And the other things, of course, now down the pipe, they're already talking now immediately of giving huge amounts of money for electoral reasons, rather than taking money away from the politicians to be elected, making it less of a money game. They're going to give much more, but only to parties that fully support the European ideal. UKIP and other parties that go against it will have no funding. So it's becoming less and less democratic, and right down the road of what I think justly call the Euro-Soviet. And I think regarding the euro, it'll be used as a weapon to increase togetherness and, of course, a super state. As regards commodities and things, what we're living on with click money and click credit, masses of money, masses of credit and liquidity, but falling value, is that bonds are going up because of ZERP, zero interest rate policy and quantitative easing, and equities have risen on this thing hugely, record highs in both bonds and equities all over the world. But of course, that is all organized by the swamp. If the swamp starts to get eroded, then the reverse is going to happen. Bonds are going to be probably the biggest bear trap in history. Equities are going to be a problem. And of course, commodities and precious metals will rise, certainly in dollar price and also in value. And so I think the whole thing depends on how effective it is to get rid of the swamp. Realizing it's both parties in both Britain and America that have ruined the countries in the last 100 years. If you take an actual number of it, in 2014 in January, when the Fed opened its doors, that dollar today, it would be only worth, in other words, 2 cents of that dollar would buy a present dollar. The Fed has devalued the dollar by over 98%. And in those days, there were $8 to the pound, and now there's 121. So you can see that the pound is barely above 100% devaluation. And this has been done by the swamp, which is both parties. And the question is, how long will it take for reality to dawn, whether they can put it off with another type of QE, giving people money, not even QE, but just giving us all a check, like the Republicans did under Bush, but a massive check, like $10,000 a piece, all this sort of thing, to fend off that awful day that reality may dawn.
Your thoughts, Ira, on this and the possibility of fiscal integration in the EMU?
Well, it's like John and I have been talking our whole lives, but he uses the term the European Soviet, and you know, Richard, and I've talked about him quite a bit. So, John, I don't know if you know Bernard Connolly, but he's a very dear friend of mine. So when I hear you throw that out, it reminds me of his great book, The Rotten Heart of Europe. But I'm going to answer your question, Richard. This is all about the fiscal harmonization. This has been the program pushed by the likes of George Soros and what I call the Davos crowd. And I don't mean that, you know, as a conspiratorial. That's just what they've been pushing. And so now Mario Draghi has a very serious problem. And Macron's speech yesterday was absolutely horrendous and stupid. He should have canceled that press conference that he had scheduled before the German election, because it's just not going to happen that fast. And it puts Draghi now, as I would say, the only game in town, which is why these people or those people, including, Peter Buchmeier and I have gone back and forth on this, there will be no quantitative tightening yet from the ECB, because Draghi is now going to be in a bigger hurry to keep piling on sovereign debt onto the balance sheet of the ECB, because only through that effort can he synthetically create the euro bond that they're craving for. So keep loading it on, keep loading it on, and then they're going to turn to the Germans and go, well, you can't possibly not be the guarantor of this bond. You have to. We have all this debt piled on the ECB. you're going to be the one who have to guarantee this. Otherwise, as John, he doesn't say the word, we go into a massive debt default and the world goes into a major depression. That's what's happening, and this is all being done by Mario Draghi. And if Mario Draghi hears this broadcast and he wants to go head-to-head with me and argue this, I relish the day.
Okay.
Well, I totally agree with Ira, and it's interesting. I was an investment banker in London, and we were asked to be managers of a euro bond issue, not a euro with the currency, but European bond issue. And it was all going, everyone wanted to do it in Europe, except for Germany balked. Germany said, we've got terrific concerns about inflation from the Weimar. We will never forget it. And we're certainly not putting the German signature to a European bond. And I personally, despite all the talk and the movements that have taken place, believe that that is at heart in the average German. I mean, what Germany has done since the Weimar is to say, okay, you German man, work hard, work, women and men, work hard, save your money, and we as the government will ensure that that saved money is still worth the same as when you put it in, unlike the Anglo-American governments that have stolen from every saver. And so I think Germany, now that Merkel is weakened severely by, most interestingly, right-wing parties, effectively, both financial and immigration-wise, I think she's going to be under bigger and bigger pressure not to put the German signature to that euro bond. And I think that's been pushed back. And, of course, it's a big problem for Draghi, who's been depending on it. And it's going to become a tremendous issue. Germany, as Ira said, is going to be faced with collapse on the one hand if they don't sign, but a collapse of support politically if they do sign. And I personally think Germany would stand in the long run to win by not signing a bond to hell, because that's going to go for the birds. I mean, it's going to just follow the sterling and the euro down the drain. And we've got bigger challenges than just the rest of the world. We've got China that's now issuing a forward contract in oil measured in yuan, which the yuan will be convertible into gold. So if you buy your contract for yuan and then sell it for yuan at a profit, you can convert all those yuan back into gold. Now, that's going to really challenge the prime reserve status of the dollar. And that's a huge question mark. And if they do it for oil, why not other commodities, important international commodities like copper, for example? And I think we're facing severe challenges, and China is just waiting her time to strike. And whereas we're spending fortunes on military equipment, China's spending it in making sure that she's going to win economically and financially. And as the greatest generals have said, the greatest victory of power is to put your enemy in a position where they have to capitulate without firing a single shot. And I think that's what China will do.
And John, do you think that there's a possibility for the ECB to begin buying German equities if German bunds become scarce in the overall ECB asset purchase program?
Yes, absolutely. They'll do anything above the law, around the law. They have no laws. They will do anything to save that euro against the disaster that I see coming, unless the Germans back it. And the price for Germany backing it is German rule of the European Union, which it won't. It's, you know, that Germany tried three times an empire, Franco-Prussian War, First World War, Second World War, each time. And I think they've now realized that the Deutschmark, i.e. money, is the key, not the bayonet. And the key to this is either the Deutschmark or the euro to win their empire, which will be Europe. And Britain, hopefully, is going to be leaving it.
No, I think that John's exactly right, and the Chinese are interesting to watch. And more interesting is the amount of dollar borrowing that Chinese corporations and individuals are doing. This Chinese real estate market, they're doing these huge dollar bonds. You know, and I'm paying attention to that because, first of all, you know, it puts the Fed in a terrible situation. And this is what I think where John goes with not having to fire a shot. Because the Fed, they're so, you know, Bernanke, you know, beats his chest and talks about how great he's been and how great he was. I think Janet Yellen has done a much better job, by the way. But he just kept adding on and adding on and adding on. And this money had to go somewhere. And it went into the borrowings of course, emerging markets. So we're so borrowed up in dollars now that if the dollar, if the Fed were to move here aggressively, which they're not going to do, but I'll give them, their favorite counterfactuals. And let's say they do that. The rally to the dollar would be fairly severe, especially because Europe's going nowhere now. So the dollar would rally more. And because there's all these borrowings in dollars, which means that people are short dollars, essentially, that would put a huge rally to the dollar, which would wreak havoc across the emerging markets. And it's the emerging markets that are now driving the global economy. Don't believe the nonsense that it's, European growth. I still see European unemployment hovering at 10%. And I'm being kind because I'm using their numbers. The United States has tepid growth at best. So it's the emerging markets. And if they were to get into a situation where the dollar became expensive and the amount of dollars that they'd have to go raise to start paying just the interest on the debt, it would cause a very severe contraction. And that's what the Chinese, I can't agree with John Moore. It's interesting to see who is hoarding gold here. And again, people say, oh, you're a gold bug. I'm not a gold bug. And I listen to John, he's not a gold bug, but I'm not a fiat currency bug either, because I see the games that they play. So I don't love any investment that much. There's nothing that I see, but I just try to protect myself and to see where the world's going to have to go to. So I'm in total agreement with what John's putting out there. And the ECB, Mario Draghi, is the most dangerous person right now in the world, right now, because he's in a hurry. And he's now lost his key supporter, who is Angela Merkel. Merkel is really going to have problems. And if you follow the news today, Schwabel is already out as finance minister, which means that it's going to be Linden, who's the head of the FDP, who gets the finance ministry. And he's already drawn a line in the sand that he won't go to for fiscal harmonization in Europe. So this now gets very interesting. And nobody even is talking about the fact that Schwabel is going to take the presidency of the Bundestag, which, I haven't written about it, but I'm going to write about it this afternoon or later, talking about the triumvirate that is now going to confront Macron, which is you're going to have Schwabel, who's a fiscal conservative at heart. You're going to have Linden, who has made his fair. And now you're going to see the resurrection and the loud voice of Jens Weidmann. I think this now gets very interesting.
Yes, well, I think that's fascinating what you say. I totally agree with you about Bernanke, Yellen, and these things. China, of course, it's been borrowing hugely in dollars. Of course, it's got a lot of dollars in terms of securities, treasury bonds. It's the second largest holder after Japan. Well, of course, the Fed is the largest holder with about $4 trillion. Japan is about 1.05 and China is about 1.02 trillion, and it vies with Japan for being the second holder. And of course, they will be paying back any debts they borrow. It's like balancing, by borrowing dollars, they're balancing the dollars they own, which I think is entirely sensible. And even if they borrow more than they have, if they borrow more than 1.02 trillion, they're going to be paying back in peanuts. And so I see that as a great strategy for Japan. With regarding gold, it's rumored, we're told that America has 8,000 ounces of gold in Fort Knox, and it may still be there. But the reason that we're not allowed any audit of Fort Knox is because nobody knows who owns it anymore. It's rumored, and I say rumored, that already over the last 5 years, China's been accumulating gold by all means possible, even illicit shipments and out of London through Switzerland and so on, that it's now the largest holder and holds more gold than America. But that's a matter for rumor. But I think they're very gold conscious. And in the end, I think they see a totally depreciated dollar, which they'll be paying back their excess debt. They can write off the debts they have against the dollars they own, and then they can pay the overspill of their debt in depreciated dollars relying on gold. And I think that's a serious risk for the dollar. And the dollar still is one of the most important things in the whole world economy. And so if the dollar really collapsed, it would create mayhem in the world. That's why people are buying Bitcoin and all this stuff. I mean, the average Joe Soap, who elected that senator, that doctor yesterday in Alabama over the established swamp Republican, people are getting sick of it. And that's why people are saying if big banks like JP Morgan won't even allow us to hold cash in our own safe deposit box, which we're paying for, they're now dictating we can't hold bullion, we can't hold cash and all that sort of thing. They're moving to get rid of cash. Well, let's get into Bitcoin or gold or precious metals or something where we actually own a thing. And this is, you know, although I think some of these cryptocurrencies are highly speculative and had fantastic gains recently, but I think highly speculative, that the people are going for it in desperation to get out of the clutches of big government, swamp government that's just robbing them blind.
And John, what are your thoughts on the current status of Brexit and the potential for other exits in the EU, EMU?
Well, first of all, I thought May, I saw her first speech on there and met her very briefly. I thought she was terrific when she got in and even when the Brexit vote happened last summer, 2016, I mean. And she was strong and everything. But then she was advised by these two incompetent people to go for an election, trusting the polls, which had thought it were all wrong on both the Trump election and the Brexit vote, and to trust those polls. And she went in and got heavily defeated in the polls. It's still the government, but she's severely weakened. And now the Remainers are really making hay over it. And I thought her speech in Florence last week was very weak. I mean, offering to pay. I mean, Britain is the European Union's second largest contributor. Why on earth should Britain pay anything, let alone billions of dollars? And she sort of gave way a bit on that. I thought that was disgraceful. And also lengthening the time of the transition. We want to stick strictly to the two-year transition so that if these people that want to have a divorce, where the divorce is put off until after the financial arrangements, which is the reverse of every other human thing. You have the divorce first and then talk about the finances. They want the reverse. I think that's obscene to put a great bill in of $100 billion plus, euros plus, for Britain, which is the second biggest contributor. It's outrageous. And she's giving way, and that worries me. But the big thing is, just as Ara said right at the beginning, I think Merkel's election has actually strengthened her hand a little. So she's almost back to where she started a week ago. Still it's a touchy business. And you ask, what are the other things? I think the European Union, if Britain wants to stop Britain getting out, its largest contributor and everything else, and I think there are only four countries where Britain enjoys a trade surplus. All the rest have trade deficits, have trade surpluses with Britain. So it would be a severe blow, both trade-wise and economically, if Britain leaves. And they want to make sure Britain doesn't leave, and they're going to tie Britain down and punish Britain as an example to anyone else, like Spain, Italy, Greece, that wants to leave, or Poland. You can't leave, you're going to be crucified. Look what we did to Britain, and Britain was rich, and we still smashed her. And so it's a huge thing ahead of us now. And this Sunday, I felt very depressed that May had given away so much. But then with Merkel's erosion of her vote, I'm feeling slightly more bullish.
And Ira, your thoughts on the potential for other exits in the EU, EMU?
Well, John's 100%. I agree with him 100%. Yeah. They're going to punish. It's to be made an example. And the Brits don't really realize how good they are getting out. Because when you go to fiscal harmonization, if they go to that, and I think it was a week possibly before, I think it's been much weakened. It's going to cost them a fortune, anybody who has any money. And the Brits have money. So, why do I know? All you do is have to open your eyes and look to see what's going on with the Target 2 funding through the individual national central banks in Europe. The Germans are accepting the liability for the entire project, and nobody's ever asked them. Otmar Issing himself wrote that article 2 years ago that they put in the FT, where he talked about no taxation without representation. And this is going to become the battle cry in Germany, because exactly. You cannot escape from it.
Exactly.
And if the Brits don't leave, the bill, I wouldn't pay them a dime. I'd say to them, you know what, come and get it. Come and get it. They can't put an army. They couldn't bomb Libya. So I don't even know what the Europeans are talking about. They had to get the ordnance and weaponry from the United States in order to bomb Gaddafi. So this is not 1914. You're not coming to get it. You're not getting paid because you've gotten all you've got from us and we've gotten nothing in return. You're trying to steal the financial center of Europe out of London. It's been the French have had their eyes on this forever, and now they think that they have a free pass at it. I give them nothing and tell them, you know what, you're lucky I don't send you a bill for all the aggravation and all the court costs that I've had to endure and all the other things that we've had to endure. And John's point about Germany and Britain industrially being tied at the hip is absolutely right, and the Brits should start playing that up more and more. And if I was May, I would turn around and give them a bill and say, here's what you owe us for our good offices and all the time that we've had to put. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
I quite agree. I totally agree. And I'd just like to add one point, was when that wretched man Brown was prime minister, no relation of mine, I hate to do that, was prime minister of England, of Britain. He was asked to give the British contribution of gold into the European Central Bank, which was the second largest, of course. And he was so ashamed of the thing that he didn't want the television and the news picking up truckloads of gold being shipped to Frankfurt from London. And so he sold half of Britain's gold reserves at just over $300 an ounce and lost Britain billions and billions of dollars just on that transaction alone, just to save his face. It was outrageous. So he could wire the money rather than send it in gold. It removed Britain from being like the fifth largest holder of gold down to about the 10th. It was staggering, really. All these countries that save money, like Germany and France and people, have large gold holdings, Switzerland and all that. They all have large gold holdings. Switzerland is trying to get rid of its gold because its Swiss franc is so strong, and they're trying to do everything to weaken and be like members of the depreciation gang to get their Swiss francs cheaper because it's hurting their trade. But that's a false indication. The Swiss basically are like the Germans and savers and people with sound money. They're sound money people and savers as a result. But the Anglo-American world has turned from savers into spenders, and for spenders, depreciated money is the name of the game. Dishonesty, yeah. Financial dishonesty over honesty, really.
Yeah, and squeezing and, you know, the name of the show is Financial Repression Authority, which it emanates from. Nobody is financially repressing. Well, the Fed was number one, but now number one, of course, is the ECB. But I just want to pick up from what John talked about with the Chinese hoarding gold. And, John, I think you'll appreciate this. If you go back to, I think it was November 2nd, 2009, when the IMF had its last gold sale, it sold 200 tons of gold to the Indian, the RBI, at $1,048. Now, that's been a very important level for me. In fact, the last move down in the gold stopped at 1045. And that's been a very significant level because the Chinese were furious that the IMF sold that gold to the RBI because the Chinese wanted to buy that gold. So that becomes a very critical level of look at all this into what the Chinese truly want to do. And you know what? I think the third largest or fourth largest gold holder in the world is the IMF, even though they cry they don't have enough funding. You know, I always say all those good Keynesians at the IMF, and I have no problem with Keynes, but they have a problem with Keynes from the gold perspective. Why don't they monetize that gold and turn it into gold-backed bonds? IMF issued gold-backed bonds, and you watch how the Chinese would scoop those up in a minute, which is why they won't do it. Because they know who's waiting there to take and accept that hoard of gold.
Yes, the IMF used to have an SDR convertible into gold by central banks and then abandoned the gold link, just as Nixon abandoned the dollar gold link in August of 1971. But the net position of gold versus currency is that gold is real money. And if gold has the ascendancy, it means reality will dawn and all its zero interest rate policies, click money, click credit will vanish. And that will bring catastrophe, financial and economic catastrophe. So the central banks of the world are united underneath by making sure that reality does not dawn. But the awful thing is that history has a habit of eventually something happens and reality does dawn. And of course, one of the countries that's really interested and very powerful in having reality dawn on the West is China. And that's why I think China will win this battle without firing a single shot. And that's the sad thing. I'm very pro the armed forces and everything, but I don't think any shot is going to be used if our currency collapses, which is what the real threat is.
And if we know the Chinese, they'll be bimetallists, and because they've got a little evening with, to settle with the Brits over the silver situation in the 1800s, so they'll probably be bimetallists by that time.
Oh yes, it's a precious metal standard, but the big boys use gold. That's why I think silver is a greater investment at the moment, because at the moment, if you imagine a bell curve, we're on the extreme left-hand end, very, very few people compared to the world's population own precious metals. And of course, an ounce of gold at $1,300 is a lot of money for the average Joe Soap. But at $20 for a coin in silver is not so bad. And therefore, the mass market will go for silver, and that's a huge part of the bell curve, and would drive silver up much faster than gold. But gold is the real money in the end, and is where the big players play.
Right. And I'll tell you from a trading standpoint, John, and you probably know this, is that there's not a real precious metals rally that takes place without silver leading the way. That's the fact. That's even the last, when gold ran up to $1,900, it was silver that led the first leg of it by a lot. So I keep waiting for that to happen. It's been, somebody has their foot on it, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, it's the thing is when the average Joe Soap, who's voted in UKIP and voted for Brexit and voted for Trump and voted for this doctor in the election last night in Alabama, if those people get worried about their money, they buy silver. And that's why silver leads the way, and silver's way behind the value of gold in the traditional range. And so I agree with you entirely.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Well, Richard...
That's great insight, gentlemen. And I know you have a time constraint, John, but how can our listeners learn more about your work, John?
Well, I write for europacificcapital.net. Europacificcapital.net is a website, and I write for that. There are a lot of back articles and things like that. That's mainly what I do, and I sometimes get asked to go on Fox, CNBC, CNBC Asia. To speak about these things, but then I never know when it's going to happen.
Great, and Ira.
You can reach me at Notes from Underground or IraHarris.com, IraHarris.com, and you can click on Notes from Underground, which will appear there, which is where I blog at. But I'm on Santelli all the time, and I got to tell Rick Santelli to get John Brown on. This is like, I mean. Okay. He needs a British voice.
Excellent.
Thank you very much, Ira. Thank you.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.